It's the State of Gaming Podcast.
Hello, hello. Welcome back. It's the new year, kind of, for somebody. It's the State of Gaming Podcast, the first real episode of 2024. That's right, your Pop Zara pals. We skipped January because, as you'll find out, we did already did something in January that was really big. You can't have too much of us. This is Nathan Evans, managing editor of PopZara.com, back once again to talk about everything about the world of gaming for February 2024, but can't do it alone. That means you got to ring in the co-host. That means Corey Gallagher. Corey, welcome back.
It is Gallagher, same as it's always been, but hello, everybody.
You know what? I had a sore throat last month. You can blame the biopsy or whatever I'm blaming. As I acknowledged, we skipped January because we already did something in January that was pretty big. Do you remember that?
No, remind me.
Remind you, we did the wrap-up, the best, the worst, all that stuff.
Oh, so you knew what it was. Then don't ask me. Just tell them.
That's called padding. We padded.
Okay.
We padded it. No, here's the thing. Nobody wants to listen to two of us a month. Usually in January, it's kind of the gimme month anyway, not a lot going on. So if you're wondering...
Well, when we did that one thing, there were three of us, actually, including Anton from Third Coast, I believe it's called.
Yeah, our good buddy. But he's a regular. He's almost a staff member at this point.
Wow.
I know, crazy.
Run away. Get away while you still can.
Get away while you still can. But anyway, we're back. We're talking about February 2024. Leap year this year, by the way. You know that.
Sure is.
But chronologically, if you're listening, it's already March, so we're already kind of a little behind. But that's okay, because it's worth the effort. It's worth the wait. The format is we usually talk about the biggest games that are released for the month of February 2024. Then we talk about what sold the month prior, and then we just sort of cover everything else in between. Speaking of sandwiches, let's get this started. So what were the biggies, the big releases for February 2024?
Well, the actual biggest game to come out in February 2024, I think we've all known about it for a while now. They finally released the second of the Final Fantasy VII Remake trilogy. This is Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
So this is the second... How would you qualify this? Because it was a planned trilogy, right?
Yes, and it still is as far as I know.
But each one is kind of different. I know this sounds weird, but I really want to hear what you have to think about this.
I mean, so the first game was, if you think about Final Fantasy VII, it's basically split into three parts. You've got your opening part in Midgar, which is the techno-cybernetic city where you and your fellow eco-terrorists are battling an evil corporation. Once you're done with that, and in the original game it takes about two or three hours, in the remake it takes about 40 hours. You move on to the overworld, which is meant to be this big grand reveal where, A, actually, an overworld does exist. There's a whole lot more of the game than just this one city, and it's super impressive, and your mind is blown. And that's kind of what we tried to do with Rebirth, where we completely shift up how the game works from a very linear RPG kind of thing to a more open world situation. And presumably the third game will focus on the final battle with Sephiroth and such.
I'm just going to wait another 20 years before they reboot it and remaster it again. And then it will be called Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
Get it? It's funny because they remake stuff sometimes.
Yeah, that is
true.
That's
the joke.
Has there ever been a game that's been remade, like specifically remade and stretched more than Final Fantasy VII, to be honest?
The original Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah, but that's sort of like, that's bouncing back. But like, there's been, like, it's a genre up to itself. Like,
also, I think they've only remade Final Fantasy VII once.
Not really, but you know what I mean, though. They've offshooted, spun off. Everyone listening knows exactly what I mean. If you love Final Fantasy VII, you're not lacking for Final Fantasy VII content. But I'll say this. The game's out. You like it. It's PS5 exclusive right now.
Right now, but there's definitely going to be a PC version. And yeah, I've been enjoying it quite a bit. If you're fond of those kind of open world games that have taken the world by storm lately, Breath of the Wild, Immortals Fenyx Rising, the biggest one of them all, Genshin Impact. It's a lot like all those games, big open world to explore, stuff to do, things to kill, stuff to collect. It's a lot of fun.
You know what? Maybe at some point, I know there's a growing cry for this. Maybe at some point we'll finally revisit Final Fantasy VIII. But I'll tell you what, I don't need Squall. I want them to revisit Final Fantasy IX.
You know, there's definitely been indications that that might happen, so I guess we'll see. It's funny, the same leak that told us about the existence of this next game I'm going to talk about actually mentioned the likelihood of a Final Fantasy IX remake.
Really? Well, I mean, I don't even know if a 9, but like, do you remember before Final Fantasy VII, there was Mog, there was Chocobo, like Final Fantasy was so connected with other characters other than Cloud.
There are definitely Moogles and Chocobos in Rebirth. Your batting average is low today. Let's go ahead and get off of Final Fantasy before.
Can you tell I'm not a JRPG gamer? Can you tell? No, I went through it the first time.
Man, We're going to keep you away from this topic. We can move on to a topic you're probably more familiar with. Mario versus Donkey Kong exists, and it is on the Switch, and it is a puzzle game. Have you played it?
You know what? You played it. I know you have.
I have played it.
I didn't even play the demo yet, but I'll tell you what. I was a huge fan of it. Was it Game Boy Advance or was it DS?
It was Game Boy Color.
Game Boy Color. Well, what was the one that there was some remaster of it on one of the? It was one of the first games you could
actually
download.
It might have been the 3DS. I think
but, it was. They had like
but the first
minis.
One of these was on the Game Boy Color.
Okay, Game Boy Color. But that's forever. That's a lifetime ago.
Yep.
That's the. You know when Game Boy Color came out? That's when Final Fantasy VII came out. There you go.
Oh, that's crazy.
Same years. Boggles
the mind. Yep. So. Yeah, Mario versus Donkey Kong. You basically control Mario, and you go through these puzzle-themed levels. At first, it kind of seems like the classic Donkey Kong game, where you have barrels thrown at you, you gotta dodge and get up to Donkey Kong, save the day, etc., etc. It quickly turns into a puzzle-themed kind of thing, where you are trying to save these little robotic mini Marios from Donkey Kong, who has stolen them all, probably for sexual purposes. But you're gonna save them all, he's not gonna get his giant monkey rocks off, it's gonna be fine. Every set of stages, you do a level where you guide these little robotic mini Marios through a puzzle, trying to keep them getting blown up, and then you also battle Donkey Kong, and it's just this ongoing series of ever more complicated puzzles that require you to use your brain. I'm not great at using my brain. I mostly solve my problems with my fists and with yelling. So this game has been a little bit out of my comfort zone, but it's not bad.
Well, do you remember back in the 90s when these type of games were a huge genre? Like a giant thing, like
yeah. There was a period around the what was it? Maybe the 90, late 2000s.
Well, I was gonna say like maybe even late 80s, like Lemmings. You know,
oh yeah, yeah. So the, yeah, they the come three back Vikings. And forth, yeah, there was a period where we did puzzle platformers, and there was a period where we just did puzzles. And yeah, that's true. And this probably would remind you a little bit of Lemmings in some cases, or Lost Vikings. In fact, lots of puzzles, lots of switch hitting and so on and so forth. If you're into that kind of thing, you'll probably like it. I will have a longer review on Pop Zorro, but I assure you that it's going to sound a lot like that. So.
You know what's really sad? Like, I think, when did it come out? A year ago? 2 years ago? The Abe's Odyssey? Abe's Exodus?
Soulstorm.
And it got sort of smushed by a lot of critics, but I actually played it. I actually liked it quite a bit.
Yeah, it's totally fun. It just really depends on what you're into.
It's a taste.
I don't think that puzzles are for everybody, really. That's kind of how it is.
Oh, no, not at all. In fact, quite honestly, they turn a lot of people off.
But, yeah, no doubt.
But anyway, let's get into the next one, because I think there might be a challenge for the biggest game of the month, if we're being honest here.
Yeah, the actual biggest game of the month we won't get to until the very end. I'll talk about another big one, Persona 3. Now, you were going on a minute ago about remakes and remasters, sounding like you're some 1,000 subscriber YouTuber, and that's fine. I understand that. Basically what we are.
Hey, 994, okay?
Hey,
I'll get there.
Persona 3 got remade. And it's called Persona 3 Reload, and that's pretty cool, but this is actually, I want to say, the third time Persona 3 has been remade.
Yeah, I was going to say, I said, can you name another game? I should have mentioned, like, what's the Japanese name again? It's the, goodness gracious, how do you pronounce it in Japanese?
Oh, no, I'll wait, please.
No, I forget.
No, give it a shot.
You know what? Throat's kind of clearing up. I don't want it to be disrespectful. No, but I truly forgot what it's
called. This is part of the Shin Megami Tensei series.
Shin Megami Tensei. There,
there we go. And,
Persona's a lot easier to say.
Yeah, Persona. So originally it was going to be part of the Shin Megami Tensei series, and we just kind of branched off into its own thing. It's a little nuts. Anyway, so we took Persona 3, which came out way back when, in the I want to say in the mid-2000s on the PS2, eventually, that had an expansion/remake called Persona 3 Fest, and eventually that was remade again on the PSP for Persona 3 Portable, which you can also get on Steam. And now there's Persona 3 Reload, which is a remake of the original game. New art style, new graphics, everything is redone. It looks real cool. You can get that on Steam. You can play it on Game Pass.
You know what's really crazy? 1997, right? When we talk about Game Boy Color, Final Fantasy, Metal Gear Solid, Zelda, all this stuff. You know what's really funny? For a lot of people like today, our age and younger, that was their formative year. Like, that's when things really got, when, you know, shite got real. But these, like, Shin Megami Tensei, that goes back to the 80s. That's crazy.
That's, yeah, I mean, there was even a movie over in Japan.
Yeah, like, well, like, sometimes if you ever look at Japan, like, 1980s Japanese, like, video games, it's like you're looking into, like, an alternative world.
Like, it's crazy.
It's crazy. It's fun, though. I recommend it.
Yeah, speaking of fun and things we recommend, Persona 3 Reload, which we'll probably get a review up sooner or later about this one. But one of the nice things about this game is mentioned it's on Game Pass. You don't really need a review. If it sounds good to you, give it a shot. You should have Game Pass, by the way.
That is crazy.
It's on Game Pass. Came out on the first day. This is a fantastic game. It was a fantastic game. Every remake made it better. This one is... I wouldn't quite say it's the best. It's missing some of the content from the previous ones, but they'll probably add that in later. If they don't, they don't. It's fine. Game is good. Take a look. Next up in the list of biggest games of the month, Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League is a thing that exists.
Let's just say, when we say biggest games of the month, we're not necessarily saying most beloved or most popular.
When we say biggest, we don't mean that Reddit liked them, that's for sure. Because the next one we'll talk about, they weren't a big fan of either. Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League. It's been in development for God knows how long. And it came out, and I've played a little bit of it, and if you've played Crackdown, it's a little bit like that, and it's got Justice League characters, and I think there's a bunch
Would you say it came out before it came out? Is that accurate?
What?
Didn't this game get leaked?
No, you're thinking of the Wolverine game.
No, I mean, I thought something got leaked regarding to Suicide Squad. Something happened, like some assets or something, besides Wolverine.
I mean, maybe. I wouldn't know about that. But anyway, the game itself that came out, it's not bad. Definitely one of those games that's better to play if you have some friends who you can convince into buying Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League, which good luck with that. This is one of those games where, funnily enough, I think it would have been better if it were on Game Pass, because then it's a really easy process to get people to play with. But even if you can't, gunplay is fine. The characters are all nice and differentiated. There's some loot. It's fine.
Isn't this considered the follow-up to Arkham Knight, though?
I believe so, to some degree, yeah. That would be Gotham Knights, I think.
Gotham Knights. Is it Gotham? There's so many of those Batmans, but, like, the good Batman.
There's too many Final Fantasies. There's too many Batmans.
There's too many
Batmans. I just want to retire and read my books.
I can't keep track of them all. So.
Yep.
But anyway, it did get this game. I don't know. I think this is what you would call the pile-on, where people latch onto something and they start bullying it.
Yeah, exactly. It was determined that people you weren't allowed to like this game even before you played it, basically. But if you somehow manage to get past the peer pressure and give it a shot, it's totally fine. I wouldn't say it's not going to make Game of the Year, but when it drops to $30 on Steam, probably worth a look.
Well, everybody hates it, and some people have actually played it. So
yeah, who would have thought, right? Speaking of which, Skull and Bones exists, and unlike most of the time when I make fun of internet people for being internet people and getting mad at games, Skull and Bones kind of sucks. So, sorry, Ubisoft, you guys sent us a review code, and I'm kind of spoiling our review in advance.
I think they know.
Okay, Skull and Bones isn't very good. It is a pirate game. A pirate, I guess, it's not really an MMO, but it's got MMO-adjacent qualities, and it's not really a game, but it's got game-adjacent quality now. So you played Assassin's Creed 4 back in the day, right?
Before I reboot.
So imagine if the ship combat was the entire game and there was no story. There's no story. Mm-hmm. You can create your own character, but you only get to see them in town, which you're rarely ever at. And most of the game consists of collecting resources to slightly upgrade your ship. And that's the whole game.
Well, two things. One, Assassin's Creed Odyssey had pirating sections in it with the ships, remember?
And
that was great. That was fantastic.
That's totally fine, but as you might imagine, maybe not quite enough to hold up a whole game by itself without a story or anything.
What about Sea of Thieves? How does it compare to Sea of Thieves?
Sea of Thieves is a little bit more of a direct and straightforward kind of experience. Sea of Thieves actually was ruined recently when they implemented PvE servers.
But it's coming to PlayStation.
Oh boy. Yeah, the big thing about Sea of Thieves, I'll mention it now. Sea of Thieves was fun if you wanted to actually be a pirate and hunt people down. They've now given people safe servers where they cannot be hunted down. So they're all going to be on there. There's nobody to hunt in the PvP servers anymore. Rest in peace, Sea of Thieves. Now you can play Skull and Bones instead, except Skull and Bones is not very good. Can't recommend it.
Let me ask you a question. Have you heard about what's happening in Hollywood with companies like Warner Brothers, where they'll take movies that are completely finished and just cancel them to save for tax rebates?
I see.
Yeah, there was a Batwoman movie. Right now, the big hullabaloo right now is a movie called Acme versus Coyote.
Sure.
It's a live action animated hybrid where the coyotes takes Acme to court. I'm not lying. But what happened is they'll take these movies that are completely finished and just not release them and claim tax rebates. So my question is, when you have games like Skull and Bones, a game that even Ubisoft was reticent to release.
Yep.
I wonder why they don't do it for games.
I'm not really sure, because I don't know that anybody is really thrilled about Skull and Bones. I try to come into these things with an open mind. You know, I like the vast majority of what Ubisoft makes. Where people say that Ubisoft games are all very samey and boring, I think that they've kind of nailed a good foundation, and they've hit the fundamentals, and when they make new games, it hits those fundamentals again, and I enjoy it.
I will say this.
The case here.
My favorite game of 2024 is an Ubisoft game so far. So far. So,
is it Prince of Persia: The Lost Crown?
No, it's Skull and Bones. No, it's it is Prince of Persia. If you haven't played it,
that is an
excellent
game.
It's fantastic. It's literally like a new classic, and if you play it, you'll understand. So.
Yeah, it's a very, very solid game. Definitely worth a look. Skull and Bones is not, but the nice thing about Skull and Bones is, if you don't believe me, and you want to try it yourself, Ubisoft Plus, $10 a month. You know, I want to get into this real quick before we move on.
Is it 10 or is it 17? I thought it was 17.
It might be 15.
It's something. It's not a full price.
It's not expensive. Yeah. So you'll see it a lot on YouTube these days, and you'll see it a lot with people just talking in general, the complaints about the death of physical media. Like, oh no, I can no longer go to Target and buy a physical video game anymore. These evil companies want me to subscribe to their services, and that's where they'll only release their games. And okay, I want you to think about it with me and do the math, okay? So I bought Final Fantasy, right? Final Fantasy came out on Thursday, and it cost me $70, right?
Mm-hmm. With tax.
With tax. So call it 75. Game Pass costs me, what, $15 a month?
I'll tell you what. I know where you're going, but I'm going to stop you, and I'm going to agree with you, but I'm going to move it to the next segment and say, when people complain about the death of physical media, they're complaining about something aspirationally, because they are not going to be playing these things 24/7. And 30 years from now, you are not going to be giving your children copies of Skull and Bones on DVD.
What I'm going to end up saying, basically, and I'll spoil it now, is that for the cost of one of these brand new games, you could subscribe to three of these services.
You know what's funny, Corey? The only media in the history of humankind that has ever survived in a good way that has actually profited humanity has been books.
Yep.
Like, that's it. Like, I don't care if you do them on papyrus, whatever you call it. I don't
papyrus.
Care if you do papyrus, whatever.
Papaya would probably be kind of leaky and smell bad.
You know what I mean. But at the end of the day, that's the only format you kind of want to be retained. But when you're talking about someone who grew up with VHS tapes, those big clamshells, then they became DVDs, then Blu-rays, then 4K Blu-rays and all this stuff. Like, you are literally asking to be hoarders.
Yeah, every step in the VHS history has been an improvement. Now, you remember back in the day, you used to have to actually physically rewind those things.
Mm-hmm. Be kind, rewind. If you don't, you get fined. Woo.
Yeah, exactly. Just we'll get into it. Point being, Skull and Bones is on a subscription service. Go ahead and give them $10 or $15 or whatever to try it if you feel like. And actually, for $15, it's not that bad.
You know, it does seem funny, not to pile on good or bad, though, is that they spend all this money, and you know what's funny? You know the phenomenon of this. We need to give it a name, but it's a real phenomenon. 10 seconds after you put a trailer for any of these things online, the nerds and the geeks will swarm, and they will find every flaw in that thing within 10 seconds. So
you'll go and you'll see on Reddit, you know, Final Fantasy VII looks like a downgrade. Yeah. I'm like, the game is like 10 times as big.
But
what are you talking about?
It's mostly for movies, but it does happen for games where the flaws of the game are so evident, like, they're so noticeable that somewhere along the lines, like what was the game last year, the big Microsoft game with the vampires?
Redfall.
Yeah, Redfall. Like, that was pretty obviously shit. But the problem is, like, they knew this going in. They were willing to put it out and sell it to you and get your money from it. NVIDIA cards were willing to give it away.
And, so they were fine with it. Like,
yeah, they were fine with it.
They were fine with it. Yeah.
But, like, you put that shit online, and within, like I told you, half a second, like, there are going to be people who know this and could have told you this and saved you a lot of money. So why don't you hire these people? They're not doing anything. I guarantee you they're not doing
anything.
Yeah, they're
living in their mom's basements. Exactly.
I mean,
speaking of video games, though, let's go ahead and keep moving. So we're going to spend all day talking about how much we dislike nerds, because we do.
No, it's not just the nerds. It's people with a certain talent. I'll say this.
A certain talent. I mean, I just dislike nerds. I'll go ahead and admit it. So the next game on here, speaking of disliking nerds, and I also don't like weebs, except, wait, Granblue Fantasy Relink is our next game. And as a weeb, I really like this game. It's actually really good. It was made by, I believe, some people who worked on Nier were involved, but
I don't think this, right?
I did. I don't think Platinum Games was directly involved, but I know that we had some people like that who worked on it, and it is an action RPG from the people who brought you Granblue Fantasy Versus.
And it's Japanese, right? It's actually, it's not
very Japanese.
It's not Korean or it's not Chinese, so.
What? Anyway.
You know what I mean. There's so many of these games that are coming out that are from China. Like, let's be honest. There are people who are complaining that, oh, they're going to infiltrate your PC and suck out all your data and all this. I'm not one of those people.
I mean, I've already sucked out all your data.
What?
It was delicious.
If you find any money, we'll split it.
So. Sounds good. Yeah, okay. So Granblue Fantasy Relink. Basically, it is a retelling of some of the... Well, it's not really a retelling. It's basically a plot and from the mobile... This is difficult to talk about because Granblue Fantasy is a whole franchise. It's got
it's a mobile game.
Yeah, it's pretty big. I was talking to a friend the other day. You know, you could spend like a week or so doing nothing but Granblue Fantasy related gaming and watching the show and playing the mobile game, and you'd be all right. You know, there's a lot of stuff to do in this particular franchise.
It's pretty crazy that like the first mobile game on iOS and Android had like Final Fantasy people, like Nobuo Uematsu and all that.
It's Nobuo Uematsu.
It is amazing that they got him though. That's insane.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, but so this game is actually pretty solid. It has a plot.
Really?
Well, yeah, it has a plot. What the point I'm trying to get to is it lasts about 8 hours. Once you are done with the plot, though, the game, you can keep going. We're talking for like 50, 60, 70 hours of game past the plot. So don't think the story is all you're getting here. It's basically Nier Automata, the combat system from that, meets like a loot-collecting game like Monster Hunter. Trust me, it's very good. You'd enjoy it.
Well, I'll tell you what, though. It's huge. People love it. It's so interesting, this franchise, because what's the one game you love? Genshin Impact?
Yep.
Yeah, like there's like a million Genshin Impact clones, right?
And there's quite a few of them, yeah.
There's so many of them. So it's weird when you actually see an actual JRPG from the old days. That's all I'm saying. It's not my genre, but I do like the fact there's too many
Final Fantasies. Help me.
Why called Final Fantasy if it's the final? It's like the
Pacific Drive came out, and I reviewed it for Pop Zara, so you guys should take a look at that sometime. Pacific Drive is really cool. Yeah, if you ever played the old Stalker games, where Stalker was basically about being in the area around Chernobyl where the nuclear explosion had happened, and the whole place is all messed up from the radiation. There's mutants, there's bandits, and you got to try to survive. Pacific Drive is basically that, but instead of Chernobyl, it's like Northwest California, and instead of like shooting people and avoiding mutants, you're driving an old station wagon.
Yeah, I got to tell you, the promo art for this game is insane. Like,
it's very cool.
Like when I saw it, I was like, that's not the same station wagon that the Griswolds drove, was it, in Vacation?
So, that's the one you start with, essentially. Yeah. You can upgrade it over time. The interesting point here is the plot is like the station wagon is basically starting to take over your brain. You are constantly like revising it and improving it because you're obsessed with it, and it's going to kill you if you don't find a way to get away from it.
Well, I mean, the station wagons were pretty cool back in the 80s.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just look at this thing. It's got wood paneling. It's nuts.
It's crazy. No, but it's just in... But so is it really sentient?
It's really hard to say. It's not really that it's sentient. It's that it's like on the magic artifact, makes you go crazy. We'll get into the plot. Point being, the game is cool. It's kind of a roguelike slash... I've seen people call it a walking simulator. I wouldn't really say that. Walking simulators don't have gameplay. You take your station wagon, you go out into these dangerous areas that will kill you if you get too far from your car, you know, you'll die of radiation poisoning and such, and you need to collect like loot and scrap and plastic and food and such to feed yourself and also make sure your car stays in good repair.
The only problem I have with this game, Corey, is the name. Do you remember when the Wii was very popular and they just started shout out everything they could?
And you see Pacific Drive, and you're like, oh, wow, this is just shovelware.
Do you remember that one game that came out? It's infamous. I've never touched it, but I've seen the box. Jeep Thrills.
Jeep Thrills. That's pretty good. That's a good name.
Yeah, Jeep Thrills. And, you know, you look at the back of the box, you know what you're getting into. But it's just those mono names like that, they don't really excite you. They're just there. They just exist.
Yeah. So. This is one of these things where you really need to like see the promo art and get an idea of what the game's about to get into it. But trust me, it is very good. It's really exciting. Actually, one of my favorites from this month, and there's a lot of good stuff this month, so it's definitely worth a look. Finally, the actual biggest game this month, without question, is not Final Fantasy.
No, it's not.
It's not. It's Helldivers 2. Oddly enough, Helldivers 2 is the biggest game of February 2024 by far. There's not even a comparison.
Actually, one of the biggest games of the year so far.
Maybe one of the biggest games of this console generation, to be honest. It's a little ridiculous how much attention this game's getting.
And let's just say this is a game released by Sony, right?
Yep.
This is a game released by the PlayStation brand. So this is your future, boys and girls. This is what's going to happen now. The console exclusivity is dying for most. This is the future, and it's probably a good future.
One of the reasons we were a little bit concerned about Microsoft is that Helldivers 2 didn't make it to the Xbox because it is a Sony. It's a Sony game, and I'm sure they're feeling that hurt because Helldivers 2 is huge. We're talking 700,000-800,000 people playing at any given time on Steam alone. Not even talking about PlayStation.
Since we skipped January, we didn't really have a chance to talk about PAL World very much. Yep. But how much has Helldivers cut into the PAL World phenomenon?
So PAL World is one of those games, and I hate to say it, but I love saying it actually. Mm. I think two of the worst things that have happened to gaming, it has nothing to do with physical media. I think crowdfunding was terrible, and I think early access was terrible. And PAL World, if you ask me, is going to be one of the biggest examples of the problem with early access, which is we've dropped a game that, you know, it's mostly feature complete. It's obviously unfinished. We're at a 70% state. It's never going to go past that state. The PAL World you can play now is going to be the PAL World you'll be able to play in a year. It's much like this game called Valheim that was big during the pandemic.
I remember. Yeah, these things come out, they explode, and then they sort of fizzle.
And that makes sense, you know, because if I can do 70% of my job and get paid 5,000% what I thought I was going to make for it, why would I keep doing the work?
I will say this, though. I'm going to teach everybody the word outlier. I agree with you on early access. I agree with you on scams and all this. But every once in a while, though, you do get a Baldur's Gate 3.
You do. That's a good point. Baldur's Gate 3 was out of control, and it was an early access game, and it was crowdfunded. And despite all of that, it's still a fantastic game, which is definitely worth a look, by the way. Speaking of games that are worth a look, Helldivers 2. Mm-hmm. Games that are this popular, and people hate it when I say this, but they hate it because they know I'm right. Games that are this popular for a reason. You should probably check this game out, and if you have a few friends, two or three friends who like this kind of shooter too, definitely look at it with them.
There is some evidence that Helldivers 2 hasn't even peaked yet, though. It's being held back by limitations, where it's being held back a little bit by the developers who are trying to, sort of control its expanse because it's like you said, it's not quite ready 100%.
I would say it's about 90% there. There's definitely some aspects of the game that we know are coming in the next patch, or I guess the first patch. I don't know. One of those things, too, people talk about, you know, with physical games, oh, no, you have to update. Yeah, updates are good, because Helldivers 2 is going to add a bunch of cool stuff. So if you like what you got now, you'll like it better, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, yeah, Helldivers 2, very cool game, biggest game of the month, maybe one of the biggest games of the year. Please take a look. And also, if you got a PS5, Final Fantasy, very much worth a look.
There you go.
Yep. Anyway, other notable games. We'll knock them out real quick. Tomb Raider Remastered got Tomb Raider 1, 2, and 3 on it. It's the old school classic Tomb Raider with the grid-based movement, so it's not going to be much like the remakes if you've tried those. It's a unique experience. Has that really cool thing from the Halo Master Chief Collection where you can switch back and forth from modern to older graphics. Thought that was super awesome. And those games still hold up because there's not much else like them, really.
No, there's not, including the, like you said, even the remakes aren't much
like
them.
Yeah, the remakes aren't much like them at all, yeah. No. These are very, very technical platformers, I guess the way to think about it. Foam Stars was released recently, and I'm sure it's going to die a quick death.
But it's Splatoon.
It is Splatoon. It's very similar. I really wanted to like this one, because it's one of those games that, again, the nerds come out like, this game is terrible. It's evidence that Square Enix is falling apart. Wait, how many Final Fantasies are there? But no, when I actually played this, it is pretty bad. It is Splatoon without being Splatoon, and we have Splatoon at home, so maybe we can just play Splatoon.
Wasn't there a Splatoon DLC this month too? I don't think we
there was. There, yeah. They keep adding more and more to that game. That's impressive, and
that's pretty interesting. I didn't think it would go that far.
Just kind of kicking the sand and Foam Stars' foamy face, but I guess Foam Stars is free at least. The other thing about Foam Stars is I don't normally complain about this. The microtransactions in Foam Stars are extremely aggressive. We're talking like $30-$40 for an outfit, which, that's a little...
Don't you have to be popular before you can exploit your fans first?
You know, that's the thing about this kind of thing. You know, my response typically is that if it's got a lot of microtransactions, but the game is popular, don't feel too bad about it. You know, you're going to buy something, and If you buy a costume in Helldivers 2, I feel confident it will still be there in a year. If you buy a costume in Foam Stars, maybe rethink your financial decisions. They remastered Star Wars Dark Forces.
Mm-hmm. You and I were talking about this before.
We were, and I think the conclusion we both came to is that there was a period in gaming history where we were like, you know what? We want to make Star Wars games, but it's real hard to code in lightsabers. So we're going to make a bunch of Star Wars games where you play as different, like, clones of Han Solo. Shadows of the Empire on the N64, you can play as Dash Rendar. And he's not a Jedi, he has no lightsaber.
Well,
so
you remember back in the 90s, before Star Wars got rebooted, essentially? When we never thought we were ever going to get anything ever again.
Yes.
And George Lucas was very, very good about allowing, what do they call it, the extended universes?
Yeah.
Where he said, go play in my sandbox, do whatever you want. And that meant video games for the most part, and novels. And there are some very, very good Star Wars games that came out, especially in the arcade and on the Super Nintendo. But I'll say this, Dark Star... you know what? I didn't even think about this, Corey. This game never really left the PC. It was on the PlayStation, but really badly. Yep. But it never left it. It was sort of stuck on PC forever.
Well, now this remaster is all over the place, and I have not played it. I do have a copy of it. I haven't played it yet. I'm told that it is an improvement, but the issue being that it is still Dark Forces, and...
I played it.
Dark Forces definitely improved as it had sequels, and I think it mostly improved because you got to be a Jedi.
Well, I'll say this. This game came out after Doom, before Quake, and its gaming engine was something similar to a Duke Nukem where you could look all around. But
right.
the problem, though, is that level design, our aesthetics on level design, our aesthetics on this and all that, it occupied a place where I think maybe the love for the franchise saw players through its flaws.
Right.
And I don't think its flaws were necessarily bad programming. It's just, it's of its time in a very particular way. Does that make sense?
And maybe it doesn't hold up the same way that it used to back then. But yeah, it exists now, and if you want to give it a shot, you absolutely can. If you got a remaster, take a look.
Same people who are just knocking it out of the park on all the remasters.
With Turok and such, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Quake 2 and all that stuff. They're just doing fantastic work.
Chiron the Wanderer, are you familiar with that series?
I'm familiar with the series, never played it, but that's why I put it on the list.
So right now, we are in the midst of a big resurgence of the roguelike genre, where it's a top-down, turn-based game where if you die, you start over, et cetera, et cetera. And we can pin a whole lot of this popularity, trace it way back. We come to Shiren the Wanderer, one of the first games of this sort. It was on the Super Famicom. And they've continued to make sequels and sequels and sequels and sequels, and this is the newest one of those. It's out on the Switch.
You know, I was talking about Japan being an alternative universe. One interesting thing about the new world we live in is that there was a time when developers and publishers thought that these type of games would never exist in the West, that no one would be interested. And so for years,
here we are.
Yeah, but now when anime and manga dominate, these things are here. They are accepted. So that's cool.
So I spend a lot of time on the treadmill these days, and one of the reasons that that's the case is that I spent $20-25 bucks on Amazon, and I got a big tripod stand that holds my Switch that I can use it while I'm on the treadmill. And let me tell you, folks, if you want to lose some weight real quick, this is the way to do it, because you can cardio for hours and hours, not even notice you've been playing video games. This is actually one of the games I've been playing while I'm on the treadmill, and it's solid. The other one, by the way, Pokemon, I believe it's Brilliant Pearl, might be Shining Pearl. It's one of the Pokemon games that is also an excellent choice for being on the treadmill.
You just explained why the Switch is so popular.
Because you can take it places and use it in situations where you wouldn't expect?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, that's pretty much it. So.
Yep. Please, please give us that Switch, too. I would really like it. It'd be great. Next up, they made... Okay, so this one...
I know a little bit about this, yeah.
Yeah, this one is quite the surprise. So back in the days of the Dreamcast, there was a shooter called Slave Zero. And if you don't remember it, that's fine, because most people don't. I'm a little shocked anybody did. I'm even more shocked that they made a prequel to it, and it's called Slave Zero X, and you can play it. You can play it right now. I have played it. It plays like Strider. It's really fun, actually.
Yeah, what was that game that came out last year for the Switch that was the spiritual successor to Strider?
Osmond or Cannon Dancer.
Yeah, not as good. Nowhere as good as Strider, but it has a taste.
This is like a cross between Strider and something like Streets of Rage. It's it has nothing to do with the original game. I mean, outside the plot, it does not play like the original game at all. It is incredibly stylish, really good looking, lots of fun. I guess the Slave Zero IP was on sale for like $5 and they picked it up and they're like, hey, we'll make a game now. And maybe they just slapped some assets on a game they'd already made. I don't know. Point being, Slave Zero X exists.
It exists. And
it exists. It's very cool. Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons got a remake.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing about this remake. I make fun of nerds. Nerds get mad about one thing about this remake, and I'll mention it. You don't have to play the game to understand that this is not supposed to be a cooperative game. This is a single-player game where you control two characters. And if you make it a co-op game, you have missed the point.
Yeah, exactly.
And this is a co-op version of this game.
Well, this is a misunderstanding of the... Remember we were talking about Three Vikings and all those puzzle games?
Lost Vikings.
Yeah, Lost Vikings, where you had to switch between the characters. And it was actually a very popular genre for a long time.
Yeah.
Well, what was the name of that game that came out? The two of them, the Plague Tale with the sister,
yeah,
the brother.
Plague Tale, Innocence, and I remember the Requiem.
Yeah, Requiem, and then they had the big game that a lot of people said was the game of the year. What was it called?
Starfield.
Not Starfield. No, what was the game that you had to play? It Takes Two, I think it was.
It Takes Two, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, like somebody said, "Hey, that works. Let's do that and let's
kind
make
of a
everything."
A sequel to a game called A Way Out from the previous
Way Out.
Year.
Same developer, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I mean, like, but if you're doing cooperative, though, on this, then it sort of misses the point.
Yeah, yeah. The entire point of this game is that you are one person controlling two characters. Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah.
The remake looks fine. It plays fine. I've not actually played it, but I've heard it plays fine. I'm not a big fan of this kind of touchy-feely nonsense. But from what I've heard and what I know about the original and its plot, the fact that it is a co-op game completely just doesn't understand what the game's about. That's a little bit silly. Nightingale came out. In early access and was promptly crushed by people wanting to play it. It is one of them open world survival crafting games, a bit like Minecraft. Yep. You control basically an old timey person from the Victorian era. Jumping Jehoshaphat.
Would they be called steampunk? Would you call it steampunk?
Oh, this is definitely steampunk. And you kind of, so London gets destroyed. And you are sucked into a whole network of parallel worlds that you have to explore and collect stuff and build stuff. And you do it all wearing like a top hat with cogs on it because it's steampunk.
Of course. I got a question for you. Do you think the people that design this stuff, and I'm not trying to insult, I get it. Like you go to the bookstore, you will see 1,000 vampire derivatives. You will see 1,000 fantasies. You'll see 1,000 Fabios. But do you ever think the person who's sitting down and creating this world says, I'm going to get it right. Like, I know there have been thousands of other attempts, but the result ends up looking exactly like everything else.
You know, the person who sat down with Nightingale and said, I'm going to make the good steampunk game, they clearly never played Dishonored. Nightingale, though, is completely fine at the moment. The servers were very crowded. It was hard to play it at first. Those have mostly died down as everybody went to go play Helldivers 2. Another game that was in early access for a long time that is now playable is Last Epoch, and I mention it. It's a Diablo-style action RPG, by the way. I mention it because it had the same problem. The servers, they sucked. It took a week, but now they're better. If you want to play a Diablo-style game that is better than Diablo 4, Last Epoch is out, and it exists. Terminator Dark Fate Defiance is some kind of RTS game. I have a copy. I've not played it yet.
I genuinely thought this was like DLC to the first person shooter.
No, this is an RTS game, apparently.
Well, you know, it's funny. They haven't announced it yet, but they're going to announce a huge Terminator open world game soon. Have you heard about this?
When did we suddenly hop back on the Terminator? Like, what?
I think the thing is, these have been in development for a while, and I think James Cameron got the rights back to the Terminator franchise, and I think the movie companies misrepresented his involvement in them. Did you see the last Terminator movie?
Isn't that the one where John Connor immediately dies?
Oh my god, I think it is. Was it called Dark Fate?
It might be.
Yeah, it's horrible. It's the one where, they did that trope where they kill off the existing character. They had to CG the actor into, like, how he looked back in 1991 just so they can kill him. Spoiler.
Right.
Then Arnold plays a Terminator who now does draperies.
Wonderful.
An interior design.
Okay.
And nobody liked it. I wonder why.
Yeah, funny how that works.
Whatever.
So it's an RTS game set in the Terminator universe. I've not played it. Have you played it?
No, and I'll tell you right now.
I guess we can't talk much about it.
I will say this. I'll say this is all I'm going to say. The Terminator franchise is two movies. It's Terminator 1 and it's Terminator 2. It does not need anything else. Nothing else.
Sounds about right to me. Much like they never made any Ghostbusters. Any other Ghostbusters movies,
no,
right?
They can come out. They can make money. You can sell costumes. But at the end of the day, people will just eventually forget the new stuff and gravitate back to the old stuff because the new stuff is derivative of the old stuff. And that's it.
Yeah, it's kind of like if you photocopy a photocopy enough times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Like they're hoping you don't notice. And again, I'm glad they're making money, but they're not adding anything to it. So that's the problem. Anyway, Terminator: Dark Fate Defiance.
Yep, it's an RTS game set in the Terminator universe. Banisher's Ghost of New Eden came out. Mm. And my favorite part of Banisher's Ghost of New Eden is the opening of the
game. I heard about this one. Yeah.
The opening of the game hits you right in the face. Like, this is set in colonial times, and there were attitudes and opinions that weren't acceptable by today's measures, but we kept them in to tell our story. And the first thing that happens is you're playing as this pair of ghost hunters, this black lady and this white dude. And you play as the black lady in the opening of the game. And you walk into the governor's house, and the governor sees you, and he's like, oh, you must be the help. And she's like, no, I'm not the help. I'm a ghost hunter. And he's like, oh, okay. Oh, such racism. Oh, yeah. So terrible. He's just like, oh, okay, I guess that's fine. Everybody just kind of shrugs and moves on, and it's kind of whatever. And I don't think it ever comes up again. And we had to have a whole screen about this. And
here's the thing. I'm going to tell you right now. What is this company made? Don't Nod.
This is Don't Nod. They are known for making games like Life is Strange. Yeah. So, you know, this is this kind of story-heavy game, touchy-feely stuff I don't usually play now.
I'll say this, and you're going to agree with me, too. It's like that old Simpsons joke where they pick Lenny to play basketball, and he's like, what, you think you just want to pick me because I'm black? And then he takes the ball and he does this amazing dunk on it. Like, with video games, you know, it's one thing to say we're going to put diversity in our game, we're going to put all this, which is totally fine and welcome, but it's like, But sometimes I think they use it as a prop so they can have it influence stories in a way that's predictable and bad.
Well, I'll definitely mention that anything that could be related to this stuff happens in the first 30 minutes of the game.
Do they forget about it? Do they just forget
about it? So the bottom line of what happens in the game, you play as this black lady at first. She's a ghost hunter. She is killed, becomes a ghost. Her ghost hunting boyfriend, who is not killed, it has to make a choice. And he's like, yo, you know, if we sacrificed a whole bunch of people, we could probably bring you back.
Oh,
and
course.
She's like, yeah, you could. And he's like, but that'd be evil, right? And she'd be like, yeah, but you could. That's kind of the whole plot of the game.
Is the game any good?
Yeah, actually. The game isn't bad at all. So Don't Nod has tried to do a more traditional game with combat before. They made a game called Vampyr back in the day.
Yeah.
And this has a lot in common with that, but it's done a lot better. Vampyr's combat was definitely something that they didn't really understand how to do yet. The combat in this is like, you know, it's still a little bit, we have Dark Souls at home, but it's very playable. It looks really cool. You're fighting ghosts when you slash through them, it like disrupts them with like where you slashed them at. It looks awesome. And the actual gameplay has a lot in common with, like, the detective mode stuff from Batman.
Of course.
Yeah. So, you know, it's completely fine. Like, I have very few complaints. I'm not even complaining about that first thing. I just thought it was funny. Game is completely okay. I'm a little shocked at how much I liked it, honestly.
I'll tell you what. You know the best joke that's ever been done about that scenario? Did you ever watch Men in Black 3?
No.
It's one where Will Smith goes back to the 60s to go do his thing.
Sure.
And, of course, you know, he's black, and he's in the 1960s. So, of course, you know, racism. Right. And there's a great bit where he's trying to steal a car, and the cop comes up to him, and he says, is this your car? And Will Smith goes, what, you think just because I'm black I'm trying to steal this car? Well, I am. And he just goes away. Best part of the movie. So.
Yep. Hey, you know, Pentiment was a game that came out a little bit ago, and Pentiment is a game I haven't played, but it's on the PS5 and the Switch.
This is the game that's made by some of the people who worked on, what was it? What was the big... Oh, goodness gracious. You know what I'm talking about. A Fallout series, right?
I believe so. And this is a very text-heavy kind of visual novel-y sort of thing. I believe it's also got some detective elements to it. It has a really cool, like, medieval tapestry art style, and I'm told the writing is fantastic, but by video game standards, that typically means the writing is on par with, like, a young adult novel from the bargain bin section of the bookstore. But
I've watched someone play this. I'll tell you right now. I watched someone play this on an Xbox Series S. Not that it matters. Right. And I remember this was a big game that Microsoft was promoting, but they didn't heavily promote it. But this was an exclusive, and I think we're gonna briefly talk about this later. So I'll just bring it up now. This was an Xbox exclusive, and it is now available on PlayStation and Switch. We talked about Helldivers being non-exclusive. We talked about this. This is the future. Like, Microsoft and Sony are no longer going to have exclusives the way they used to. So this is one of them, though. This is.
I mean, I am the first person to line up and say, hey, it's completely fine that we no longer care about what color of plastic box you own. But we do care if that color is like whatever color your PC case is, because all the good stuff's going to be on PC now. Just spend your money on a PC.
Pretty much eventually, like, the console market will eventually just become Nintendo, and the gaming market will become PC.
Sorry about that. I was dropping stuff off my desk, but I think you are absolutely correct. Yeah, Nintendo and PC.
Yeah, pretty
much.
I think
that's where we're going.
Pretty much.
Hey, speaking of where we're going, let's go and talk about the Circana numbers.
Yay! Okay. Circana, a.k.a. What would you call it? A.k.a.
So I think we're at – okay, so we're at the point where we don't have to call X formerly Twitter anymore. We don't have to call Circana formerly – it's just Circana. These are the Circana numbers. Mm-hmm. Even like the articles we look at for these numbers don't even call it formerly NPD anymore. They just say Circana. So it's just Circana.
Okay, we're done then. Yeah.
So Matt Piscatella from Circana says games and et cetera, et cetera.
He's I'm not going to get into the drama, but if you follow Matt on Twitter – excuse me, X – then you'll know that he's been sort of attacked lately for some of his saucy viewpoints, which I won't get into. But the truth is that what he does is a snapshot of what's going on in the video game world. Only a snapshot. You're not going to see PAL World. You're not going to see a lot of Helldivers stuff there. You're not going to see a lot of stuff because they don't report. Corey, there might be a time when we don't even care about Circana anymore because they're just no longer relevant. But I will say this, though. The world of gaming is going through a very big upheaval. Like you said, console exclusives are changing. Digital platforms are sort of taking over. It doesn't really matter as much as it used to. So,
I mean, at this point, I've always said it. You know, since we started doing this podcast years ago, I've always said these numbers are not relevant to you, the person paying for the game. So don't worry too much about them. They're basically just a way to talk about what games are popular right now.
That's true, and sometimes though they can have a self-fulfilling prophecy where if something becomes popular, then it becomes more popular, or if something becomes popular, it becomes less popular. It all depends. It all depends.
Like, I'll mention this from the perspective of that site I love to talk about, Reddit, because Reddit's basically the last bastion of gaming forums at this point. Their PC gaming section basically said you can no longer make posts that are about nothing but concurrent players or about sales, because it's not relevant.
I disagree. I do think there's a relevancy somewhere. I just your opinion.
I've always thought that if you're not getting a kickback from the sales don't matter to you.
I think some there's a psychic element to it though, where people feel like they're part of something, and if they feel like, oh, I'm one of the 20 million people who bought Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, because what was the big movie this weekend? Dune 2 came out, right?
Dune 2,
huge
I actually thought
movie.
About going to see it.
Yeah,
I
big movie.
It's good.
Yeah, everybody and their brother thinks this movie's the greatest thing since sliced bread.
It's got that popcorn bucket.
But you know, what, popcorn? What are you talking about? No, but nobody really got to see the first Dune in theaters because Warner Brothers released it digitally because of the pandemic, right?
I actually saw the first Dune in theaters.
But they, you know, they concurrently released it, right?
So, I suppose, but no, I definitely saw it in theaters. And
did you like
the theater
it?
Was yeah, it was amazing. Yeah, it was actually. But, I watched it again later digitally, and I'll fully admit it was actually not as good.
Here's the thing, though. But when people have these tribalistic things where they want to concur, whether it's a music concert or standing in line to get an autograph, whatever, there is something to be said about the human experience. And with video games, the only real way we have to tell if what we're doing is popular is sometimes stupid things like Circana numbers. It's small, but it's like, oh my God, I'm not alone.
Also, I was wrong. Like, 75% of the way down the article, they do mention that Circana was the NPD group. But it's not in the lead anymore, so we're not going to worry about it.
It's vestigial at this point. Can we say that?
Exactly. So, okay. Hey, anyway. So generally speaking, Circana stuff, total game sales are up, which is great.
Quite a big overall, though.
Yeah, exactly. Hardware is down a little bit, but that's not surprising because people are starting to get, you know, you don't need to buy two PS5s until you do.
One comment about this. PS5, Switch, still the most popular. Xbox on the way out. It's just the way it goes. That's just fact of nature now. You and I have been chatting about this for 2 years. It's happening. You can't change it. That's okay. But I will say this. Switch 2 rumored not to come out till next year, so maybe my prediction was way off.
Hey, very well could be. But hey, game stuff that you could predict, the list of games that are on the top 20 best-selling games in the U.S. for January.
That is, which is pretty much the only reason we talk about these things anyway.
Yeah, so. Well, everything else is just kind of like fluff. Anyway, we'll go ahead and knock them out real quick. Number 20 is God of War Ragnarok, not surprising, one of the better PS5 games, plus got a big update. Number 19 is Jujutsu Kaisen Cursed Clash. That game is not great, but Jujutsu Kaisen is extremely popular, so of course the game will sell. 18 Market 8, of course, meaning the deluxe version. 17 is Minecraft. 16 is Gran Turismo 7. 15 is Mortal Kombat 1. 14 is Elden Ring, which also has DLC coming out in a couple months. 13 is Prince of Persia: The Lost Crown. We mentioned this one briefly. It is surprisingly decent, and you should probably take a look.
I like it. You know what's funny, though? A new 2D Metroidvania game based on all franchise. Nice to see it appear. Surprised it didn't sell a little better. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think 13 is not terrible. It's on this list at all, let's be real.
Well, I mean,
though it is, oddly enough, behind number 12, Avatar Frontiers of Pandora, a surprisingly good game in its own right. Like, I'm a little shocked at how decent that one was.
This is now the game of the moment where they are giving Avatar away if you buy a new video card. This is the thing.
It's a hell of a lot better than Redfall, that's for sure.
That's true.
Number 11 is Mario Brothers Wonder. 10 is Spider-Man 2. 9 is Last of Us Part 2, because it got remastered. 8 is EA Sports FC 24. That is FIFA, or used to be FIFA. Yep. Number 7 is Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth, one of the better games we've seen so far this year.
You love this thing. By the way, Corey is obsessed with this thing.
Oh, yeah, no, this game is amazing. This game is rock solid. Yakuza is one of those things where... It's going to seem very intimidating because there's like 20 of these games. Let me assure you, you will like it. Trust me. Promise you.
This is the game where the marquee image is the guy riding a dolphin.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, this game is something else. It actually has a... So back when I used to live in Spain growing up, there was a... The big arcade game was called Spike Out.
And
it was
I know Spike Out.
It was a Sega beat-em-up, yeah. And Spike Out is playable in full in Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth.
There's a couple things where... they've done analysis on some of the games that are included, how they've actually been improved better than ever.
Yeah, yeah. It happens quite a bit. These are typically the definitive version of these arcade games, which is very cool. Number 6 is Hogwarts Legacy, another pretty decent game. 5 is Madden NFL 24, used to be called Madden.
Mm-hmm.
Number 4 is... I kind of love how they... the table refers to this as P3 Persona 3 Reload in brackets Shin Megami Tensei.
In case there was any doubt.
In case there's any confusion, let me assure you this game's just called Persona 3 Reload, and it's number 4, and it's pretty good. Number 3 is Suicide Squad. We love to hate this game, but here it is selling, so I guess we don't
Batman.
Really have much to say
It's technically Batman, right?
There's too many Batmans. Yeah,
no such thing. No, did you know they just announced a new Batman movie where Batman is going to be a dinosaur?
What?
Yeah. Like, look, I'll just say this. I don't want to get into a big conversation, but there is an entire universe of Batman animated films that are not connected to the live action films.
I thought you were joking. No,
No. Well, one of the big ones came out this Christmas. It was Batman: A Merry Batman Christmas, where it's all about Batman's son. It's basically Home Alone with Batman. Like, they experiment the hell with Batman on animated. Like, Batman and Gotham Knights, Batman with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Like, they do everything with Batman. Now he's going to be a dinosaur.
He sure is going to be. I thought you were joking. Nope. No, he actually is going to be a dinosaur. Anyway, before I get down to this rabbit hole, number 2 is Tekken 8. Played a fair amount of this. Tekken is interesting. We've mentioned a few times how you would come and just beat your butt in Street Fighter. So I've been playing Tekken lately, a lot of Tekken, Tekken 8, and... I've gotten worse at Street Fighter because Tekken is such a different game.
Yeah, let me ask you this though. I sent you this video. Did you see it? Did you see the video they made with Brian Cox for Tekken 8?
No, which is that?
So you know Brian Cox, right? The actor.
Sure.
He's always been popular, but he became like mega popular because of the show Succession.
Sure.
He's become famous for saying "F you." Can I say that? Yeah. So. Namco hired Brian Cox to do this like 6-minute recap of the Tekken story.
I see.
And it's awesome. And it's basically just Brian Cox reciting that, like, they threw him off a cliff. And like everybody in this family, he gets thrown off a cliff. And it just keeps going on and on. It's fantastic.
So in Tekken 8, there are In Tekken 8, there are recaps for each of the Tekken games, because obviously you probably haven't played them all and you don't know the plot. They use the same shot of somebody getting thrown off a cliff at least 5 times.
Mm-hmm.
It's very funny. Number one is Modern Warfare 3. Anyway, yep, there's that.
Well, you know what's funny? Last year, Hogwarts Legacy became one of the very few, like, two games ever to surpass Modern Warfare or Call of Duty overall. But it looks like, yeah, the game's still selling. So I wonder if they're going to count cumulative sales in that. I don't know.
Hey, I guess we'll have to see. There are a couple more things in this list.
Yeah.
It just says here Power World Phenomenon, but really we really already talked about that.
Well,
there is a trailer for the live-action Borderlands movie.
Did you see this?
I did. I mean, I don't play Borderlands for the plot. I'm not sure anybody does. But
Two things about the trailer. First of all, Kevin Hart, I don't know, but he's in there. Cate Blanchett is in there, which is a big thing because this is the second time she's been associated with a video game in like 2 years. Did you see Tar?
Tar?
Yeah, Tar. When she played the crazy composer, like she was like the movie.
Oh, that one. I did not see.
Yeah,
it, but I'm familiar
with
it.
And at the end, she gets her comeuppance by having to like lead a live orchestra.
Yeah, she has to play the Monster Hunter theme or whatever. Yeah, because it's video games. Ha, video games are low art. Ha.
Well, I'll give Cate Blanchett a little credit. She's one of the best actresses, you know, in modern history. She's won Academy Award. She's won everything. She recognizes where things are going. This is the new trend. Video game movies are the new comic book movies. So she's getting in on early. And the trailer looks exactly like Suicide Squad. It looks exactly like Guardians of the Galaxy. It looks exactly like that. Sounds exactly like that. Except it's got Jack Black, who himself realizes the trend. He's the best part of the trailer, by the way.
Yeah.
What does he play? Claptrap or Clap?
He is Claptrap, yeah. Claptrap. And it's exactly the kind of Borderlands humor that you would expect. I have to say, Borderlands 3 really turned me off by being very plot-heavy. It is a much easier game to play now that they've patched in the ability to skip cutscenes. Let me tell you that. So I definitely don't know that I want to sit down for a 2-hour-long Borderlands cutscene, but it's what we have right here.
You know what's funny? You talked about Pal World real quick. We already talked about it. But even in the NPD's own reporting, forgive me, I have sinned. I dead-named it. But they mentioned Pal World, but they can't really report on it because it's just not their wheelhouse. You know, they don't have the mechanisms to really talk about it. So,
yep. And the final thing that we have on here would be there are 4 games that are coming to Switch and PlayStation that were originally Xbox exclusives.
But I bought the Xbox.
Yep. The 4 games are Grounded, Pentiment, Hi-Fi Rush, Sea of Thieves. Out of those, the best one is Hi-Fi Rush. You should probably play that.
We talked about this a minute ago with Penchi, and we talked about this with Sea of Thieves. Corey, you and I chatted about this many, many times, and I will say this. I just want your opinion on this. Now, we don't have to really get into a discussion, but if Microsoft relinquishes exclusivity to another console, right? Like, it's one thing to say PC. That's different. But if they're saying that their best games are coming to their direct competitor, you understand how Blades and Razors works, right? Like Lost Leaders and all that stuff. So what would be the argument to buying an Xbox at that point if you are no longer... If you produce this box that you're already losing money off of, hoping to make money with software sales, and you are now giving up on that. So what my question to you is, what's the purpose of Microsoft continuing to stay in the hardware business?
Hard to say. I really don't think they will for too much longer, but I guess we'll see. They did confirm they're not getting out of it, a few weeks ago.
Yeah, they made some inroads about a portable thing,
let me tell you how many of the internet rumors said that wasn't going to happen, and yet there we are.
Well, this is say Microsoft that got out of the phone business, that got out of the music business, that got out of a lot of business. They're not stupid.
Yeah, the Zune was really good.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if it's good or not. It didn't sell.
I'm going to say that like the Zune was definitely better than the iPod of its time, and I got to say...
I disagree. Although Star-Lord would agree with you because he loves.
I know Star-Lord had one. That's why I can't buy it now.
But I'll say this though. But the fact of the matter is, Microsoft is the world's second biggest company for a reason. They know how to make money, and they know how to keep making money. And you make money by not losing money.
Exactly. That makes sense to me. You know, one of the reasons people get rich and stay rich is that they don't waste their money.
I'll say this though. I mean, if they do end up just phasing out the Xbox console, it's not a big loss because you can get a nice PC. You know,
we step out of the podcast, I want to hit on one of my favorite topics again real quick.
Oh, before you say that, I did want to put a big asterisk about something that we didn't talk about and we shall not talk about because it's depressing.
Oop.
You ready?
Yeah, hit me.
Yeah, you'll notice I didn't put any stories about people losing their jobs and all the layoffs that have been confounding everybody in February. It's sad. I don't want to talk about it. It's misery porn. I feel sorry for anybody who's affected.
I'll go ahead and knock it out real quick. When I was in college, I went to college to be a journalist. I majored in journalism.
I'm so sorry. You get your money back?
Uh-huh. What is the one thing that you thought I kept hearing while I was in college for journalism in the late 2000s?
Print media is dead.
What is wrong with you? Media is dead.
Yeah. So media is always dead.
I don't think you go into the video games industry unaware of the conditions that you're stepping into. And I mean, if a video game developer has to skip their second liquid lunch of the day, people riot over it. So it is sad that they lost their jobs. I'm confident most of them will land on their feet because they knew it was coming.
I hope so.
Anyway, last thing we're going to talk about for the podcast. It's my favorite topic, and that topic is controllers.
I think we need to make this a section because you are in it to win it.
I am, absolutely. So the controllers I want to talk about that I've been messing with lately, there are a few of them. There is the Gullikit King Kong 3. It's from China. You can use it on your Switch. You can use it on your PC. It's not bad. It's very standard. It's got a few of those, you know, little... It's got back buttons and such.
How do we say back this? Paddles. How do we spell this?
I believe this is the Gulli, G-U-I-L-I, Kit, K-I-T, King Kong 3.
Okay, King Kong 3?
Yeah, KK3, I think is the term they use now. KK3 Max, specifically, is what I'm referring to.
You got to be careful with those Ks. There's a lot of Ks in that title.
Yeah, KK3. Yeah. The KK3 Max.
Oh, wow.
It's got them Hall Effect sticks. It's a nice-looking controller. Feels pretty good. I don't like that it has membrane switches on the front. Next one we'll talk about is the Beitong Zeus.
Beitong. Okay, I'm keeping track of this because you could buy the King Kong on Amazon.
You can buy most of these on Amazon.
Yeah.
The Beitong Zeus 2.
Spell it.
Beitong, Zeus like the god, Zeus 2. Comes in silver and black. It's a modular controller, so you can actually remove parts of it, for instance, the buttons, and put in buttons that are different. You know, you can have membrane switches, optical switches. You can have them in whatever layout you want. It could be a PlayStation. It could be Switch, whatever you really want to do with it. It's pretty cool. The ones that it comes with, it's sold initially, and it comes with other ones you can switch out, are optical micro switches, which is their big new technology, and they feel terrible. You want to take that out immediately, put in the one that's just normal micro switches, not the membrane, the micro switches, and then it feels fine. It's completely usable.
That is... That's on a lot of mainstream pro controllers too, though. Just the swap outs for
which is nice because if anything gets like stick drift or a button gets stuck or whatever, you can switch it out.
Well, you know, you and I both like what do they call what's the little Android portable we both like, the Retcon.
What's it called?
Yeah, they have a 4 coming out. Retro.
Oh, they do. That's right.
Yeah.
What the hell is that thing
But they ship those out with different buttons because of the different types of buttons. Like you may prefer a squishy, you may prefer a tactile, you may prefer any of that stuff.
You may prefer a tactile, or you may be wrong. Exactly.
Exactly. You know, it's funny. When I was a kid, I used to on my Super Nintendo. I actually opted for. It was the first time I ever did this in my life. I opted for a third-party controller called the ASCII ProPad. I think it was.
I remember that one.
Yeah, it looked like more like the Super Famicom controller, but it had all the turbo switches. But I didn't care about the turbo switches. The D-pad was better, and the buttons were better.
Because... So about the D-pad.
Yeah.
The D-pad. So here's the thing. The next one I'll talk about real quick is the. Who made this one? This is the. This is the Big Big One, B-I-G-B-I-G space W-O-N, Big Big One, Rainbow 2 Pro.
Who names these things?
They're from China.
Of course. Oh my goodness, this thing has buttons.
Yeah, look at this thing, right? It's pretty good. The D-pad is terrible, and that is a consistent thing with these controllers.
Yeah.
It's bad D-pad after bad D-pad after bad D-pad.
That is true, by the way. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, just the best D-pad you can get on the market is the SCUF Envision Pro for PC. Most of the Switch controllers have pretty decent D-pads, actually. And on Xbox...
I'll tell you what. I think the Xbox Series... If we're talking stock controllers, I think the Xbox Series X has the best overall clicky D-pad overall.
Yeah, overall, it's usable, certainly. Like, I don't know if I'd want it instead of a stick if I'm playing Street Fighter, but it's not bad.
Well, I'll say this, but the Switch Pro controller easily has the second, if not tied, but the DualSense controller on the PlayStation has the worst D-pad of the bunch.
Oh, God, yes. And the last thing I want to knock out real quick, as far as controllers go, I had a Steam Deck.
Mm-hmm.
And I upgraded recently to a Steam Deck OLED.
Oh, did you get it? Did you get it?
What's that?
So you did get it.
I did. I upgraded to the OLED. I was originally going to wait, but I'm like, you know, I could just sell the old one.
They're still popular. People aftermarket them.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not a big deal. The OLED's D-pad is significantly better. So if you're looking to get in a Steam Deck, you've been holding off because the controls are iffy, it's a lot better.
They listened. That was probably the number one complaint about the Steam Deck was the mushy D-pad.
And it's still not great. It's still not as good as, you know, something like a decent controller, but it's definitely better than it was. You can actually hit diagonals now.
I genuinely think the reason we have so many crappy D-pads is because the people who make these things don't think the D-pad matters.
That's what I've increasingly been seeing, is that in most games these days, really, if you're not playing retro games specifically, the D-pad is not that important. It needs to hit the cardinal directions, and all of these do. So that's it.
Yeah. I mean, I know people who play, like, platformers with the analog stick and everything, but I think it's just, I hate to say it, I think it's a generational thing. If you grew up with analog sticks, you prefer them. If you grew up with D-pads, you prefer them.
Those are controllers we're talking about this time. I'm sure I'll have more to discuss next month specifically.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
The Fly Digi Zeus, or rather, the Fly Digi Apex 4.
Okay, Fly Digi Apex 4?
Now, the Fly Digi Apex series are my vote for the best controllers you can possibly get. They are astounding. They're well-made.
They call themselves Apex. So.
Yep. And it definitely counts, too. I mean, these things are fantastic. Like, for $120, you are getting a controller that will put all the other ones you have to shame. It's amazing.
What's this clip for? Is that for the Switch?
It works on the Switch.
Oh, on a phone. I see.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I don't know much about the codecs, but I know that when you and I were talking about Street Fighter VI, we did a lot with fighter sticks and everything, and it turns out, and I think Steam, thank you for this, because Steam opened up their codecs for third-party controllers other than Xbox.
Yes.
Like, if you open up your Steam right now, they'll have dedicated sections for PlayStation by name and Nintendo.
It's actually even better. If you go to any given game and you've used a controller of, like, a PlayStation controller or an Xbox controller or a Switch controller, it will tell you on the game page if your controller will work or not.
But you know what's great about that, though, is third-party controllers now, all they need to do is make their PC controller PC, and it works with the Switch. And it's fantastic. Yep. And vice versa. So that, like, triples the amount of really cool controllers you can get that are, like, they won't work on Xbox so much, but it'll work on PC and Switch, but it's the PlayStation stuff that remains the outlier because they're proprietary, but whatever.
Hey, one day. But yeah, that's what we got. Controllers, we got all kinds of stuff. We got games, and there's more coming at you next month.
I will say this before we go. I've been a big fan of 8-Bit Do, I think it is. I really like what they're doing, because especially the remodels of the classic stuff.
Yeah, they have a really solid Switch controller, but it's the 8-Bit Do Ultimate.
8-Bit Do Ultimate. That's you can get that on Amazon for almost nothing.
And it's fantastic wonderful. For the Switch.
It also works on PC. It's crazy.
Oh, there you go.
But they actually remodeled the TurboGrafx controller. I'll tell you right now, you remember how we talked about
Dark Forces.
Dark Forces, how we
Dark
said
it. Dark Fate is Terminator.
I got my sci-fi thing. But no, you remember how we said it's of its time, so you got to take it with a grain of salt. That's the TurboGrafx controller. I love the TurboGrafx controller back in the day, but I'll tell you right now, I would never want to use it again.
Yeah, absolutely not.
No, it's too mushy.
The TurboGrafx controller that comes with the TurboGrafx Mini that apparently goes for like $300 now on eBay, by the way.
You have one, right?
I do. Yeah. It's a nice collector's item these days. Yeah. They're just as bad, by the way.
No, it's just what it was. It's just what the Turbo was. But you know what? If you ever do decide to get into Turbo stuff, unless 8-Bit Do, if you're listening, please remake the Capcom 6-button controller from the TurboGrafx. Did you ever see that?
Did I? No,
yeah,
I think
well,
I did.
Capcom, what they did at the time, Corey, they actually helped design 6-button controllers for the PC Engine and the Sega Genesis. And there's a picture out there. If you ever see it, if you ever go down Reddit, RudeTube, or whatever, there's a picture of Ryu shaking hands.
And definitely not RedTube.
No, not RedTube. No, that you'll get very different images. But No, there's a picture of Ryu shaking hands with Sonic the Hedgehog. Because when Capcom started producing for Sega, that was a really, really big deal. That was the end of the monopoly from Nintendo. But that controller, that six-button controller that Capcom helped design, you can still buy it right now, brand new. Like, 8-Bit Do remade it, so did Sega. And it's, I don't know, did you, I think I sent you one. Did I send you one?
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, that's the Sega six-button pad from the Genesis.
Okay, because I thought you were saying for the TurboGrafx, and I'm like, I've never seen one for the TurboGrafx.
No, they haven't made one for the TurboGrafx yet, because there's only like 10 games that use the six-button controller, and they're all Street Fighter. But no, I'm just saying, like, that's how I go. You go for the modern stuff, I like the old stuff.
Yep.
So, but no, these are fantastic. So, new section, controllers with Corey. Corey's controllers. So,
that's a little gauche. But anyway, I think it's the end of the podcast, though.
Yeah, whatever helps you get some samples. So, So anyway, but that's thank you everybody for listening. We had a really good show this time. I will say thank you for seeing us through us skipping January, because frankly, you didn't need to hear us in January twice. But Corey, thank you once again for everything. Appreciate it. And we will see everybody on the next level. Bye bye.
Thanks for listening to the Pop Zara podcast. Remember to like, follow, share, and subscribe on your favorite podcast app or service.